Right, so now we're going to turn to Vincenzi's paper on landing gear. This is a paper that you can use to understand quite a lot of different things because it's empirical, because its empirical descriptions are so rich. Hurrah for historians. But the way that we're going to use it specifically is to look at the idea of interdependence between technologies, right? So superficially and substantively, it's a paper about airplane landing gear. We're back in the 1930s, and the discussion is whether landing wheels on airplanes should be fixed or folding, right? So should the wheels have to be permanently down? Kind of like in the Indiana Jones movies, when you see the planes there, the landing gear tends to be permanently down. Or should they be designed in such a way that they fold up and get drawn into the plane when not in use? And basically, we can understand the concepts that we already talked about pretty much immediately recognizing what kind of situation that's going to be in and what we can begin to derive from that, right? So there's almost, by definition, going to be a competition between two alternative designs, two potential dominant designs, two competing product architectures, two different ways of looking at the relationship between the wheels and the other components of the aircraft, right? In the case of competing designs, as is the case here, it kind of has to be the case that there's not one design that has yet become dominant. So again, we must almost by definition be in an era of ferment. And because we've read both Anderson and Tushman's text from last time and Schumpeter from the first lesson, we can get a pretty clear sense of what kind of period this must be for airplane designers, at least. It has to be kind of a period with some pretty substantive uncertainty, pretty intense competition between old and new designs, competition between different new designs, and quite a lot of replacement happening between old and new players in the industry. Right? Creative destruction is going to be pretty full throttle. And also, we wouldn't be entirely surprised when we see Vincenzi arguing that what he calls the usual historical references, claiming that the determination of whether wheels, landing gear should be folding or fixed was a logical consequence of technology, we wouldn't be entirely surprised when he's going to argue against that, right? We know, thanks to Anderson and Tushman, that the determination of a dominant design is not all about technological superiority, but that it's potentially a pretty complex social process that involves both technological questions but also sociological ones, right? Vincenzi's perspective on how the dominant design gets settled is going to be somewhat more complex than Anderson and Tushman's, but it's definitely going to have kind of the same flavor, right? So that, just to show you the kind of inferences we can make based on what we've already read. But let's look at what Vincenzi is actually doing, right? What he's going to do is he's going to find a leading and highly innovative aircraft designer from this period, and he's going to look at why that person did not see that folding landing gear was the future, right? And then he's going to try to understand what kind of processes play around to explain why this is so hard to see. Right. So he's going to look at this. So the person he finds is the aircraft designer called John K. Northrop. And with the kind of historian sensitivity that you can't really judge people under the unpleasantly bright light of hindsight, Vincenzi's going to kind of investigate what made him believe in an outdated technology. Right? Why did this otherwise very capable, very technologically sophisticated designer commit to an outdated technology, namely the fixed airplane landing gear? We wouldn't of course, by virtue of the productivity dilemma and disruption and architectural innovation and those kinds of ideas, not be overwhelmed by the fact that there are organizations who commit to the wrong thing and have a hard time embracing novelty. But let's try to think about what's going on in the mind of a specific designer sitting and trying to make the choice between what kind of architecture to commit to for his product, right? Let's kind of make the conflict between these two standards pretty clear, right? It's relatively easy to imagine that fixed wheels are going to be much easier to work with than folding wheels, right? The mechanisms that fold the wheels, retract them into the plane, that mechanism is going to be heavy and heavier than fixed wheels. Fixed wheels, however, are going to be aerodynamically worse than retractable wheels that can be pulled into the airplane's body and effectively leaving the airplane completely smooth. Those things were both immediately understandable for aircraft designers right from the start. But the challenge is going to be, how do you balance the two considerations in terms of all the things that are important for airplane design: fuel consumption, speed, safety, all these things, right? Both aerodynamics and low weight are going to be good for fuel consumption and speed, but the question is, what is best, right? Basically, many of these things can be calculated and they can be extrapolated using ideas that were well known in physics. But the key thing to understand is that in practice, this ends up being very complicated. Unlike the kind of performance improvements that we saw in Anderson and Tushman's argument and in Foster's about technological change, there are actually many significant performance dimensions that have to be taken into account here, right? In the case of planes, there are at least five, right? The dimensions that you have to take into account are going to be robustness, aerodynamics, weight, price, reliability, the need for maintenance, and all the dimensions except for aerodynamics, fixed landing gear is going to be better than retractable landing gear, right? As this technology emerges, right? That's super important to understand. So when you are thinking about this from the perspective of this particular designer, you're looking at a kind of the classic technological discontinuity, right? You have one technology that performs better than the new technology on virtually every dimension, except for, in this case, aerodynamics. What makes the discussion interesting, a little or perhaps even more interesting, is that you can do something to fixed landing gear that makes it more aerodynamic, right? And this is basically what Anderson and Tushman refer to as this competition you have between designs, right? So as you have substitution as you have a new technological discontinuity, in this case, retractable airplane landing gear, the established technology also experiences a burst of further innovation, right? So in this case, the fixed landing gear is also subject to innovation. Basically, what you can do is you can wrap landing gear in these, in what Vincenti calls a pants type gear. You can see a picture of what that is in figure 4 of the paper, and you can compare that to a design without this pants-type aerodynamic cape, which you can see in figure 3, right? But the point here is that as you have a technological discontinuity, you can either follow that, or you can pursue a strategy of improving the technologies that you already have. Right, you can have a burst of further development that makes your old technology perform better, also on that dimension where the new technology might be better. Right, so basically, you can do something to the legacy technology that makes it perform better and makes it more competitive relative to the technological discontinuity. Okay, in practice, in this particular case, There's another thing I would like you to pay attention to. There's another thing I want you to notice, right? This particular designer, this Northrop character, uses a particular kind of wing design where the internal structure of the wing consists of a series of rectangles that are connected in a special way, right? That particular structure is seen as radical and super promising, and perhaps this particular designer's greatest invention, right? The problem is that this structure is going to be in conflict with retractable wheels, right? Having to pull the wheels into the plane's body compromises the possibility of having this amazing wing design, okay? So you have a couple of things interacting here. You have both the fact that it's clear that you have that retractable landing gear is going to perform better on aerodynamics than fixed wheels, right? That is clear. However, you can do this. You can do something to fix gear that makes it more competitive on the aerodynamics dimension, while being already superior on all the other performance dimensions that matter. Right? That's one thing. And the other thing is, choosing this new technology, this retractable landing gear, is going to compromise another aspect of your design, in this case, the way the wings are designed. Okay? So, in other words, the retractable landing gear design for Northrop has created a problem, but he also has a solution for it, right? He can put this cape, this robe around the landing gear that overcomes the challenge posed by new technology, and that gives him the opportunity to retain his revolutionary wing design, right? And then with that kind of compromise, with that way of solving the problem, he goes on to create like this series of award-winning aircraft designs until he eventually, but quite late, shifts to retractable landing gear, right? So why was it that such a designer, such a super promising, super visionary airplane designer, was so late in seizing the future, right? So this is going to seem really opaque and like it's super deep dive, but it tells us something very important about the nature of choices as you're pursuing innovations that are comprised of multiple interacting technologies, which I would argue is very often the case, right? So a large part of the explanation for why this otherwise highly visionary designer does not seize the future, right? A large part of why he doesn't do that is associated with the uncertainty that you have when you have the development of a large number of components interacting in one given system, right? So the total S-curve for the aircraft as a whole, right, that full system technology of the aircraft is going to be based on developments in many, many individual subsystems. And is going to be the performance of that total system is going to be determined, like the performance of individual subcomponents is going to depend on the performance of other ones. So in this case, for instance, the performance of aircraft engines as one subsystem is going to spill over into the design of other subsystems, right? It's going to change, for instance, how, right, the development in aircraft engines is going to change the calculus of what landing gear design is most meaningful, right? So there is, in other words, a really complex interaction, a very complex mutual dependence, interdependence between the various components and subsystems in the plane, right? In the same kind of interdependence we actually see in relation also to what happens in the collapsible landing gear subsystem, right? The design of the subsystem that lowers the wheels is based on manually lowering them, right? That's going to be problematic and difficult for the pilot. And a good solution to how to deal with that particular operation that makes the whole of the subsystem perform in a particular way is only going to be jolted forward when one particular inventor, in his attempt to create better tram brakes, finds the O-ring, right? So you have that really tiny component, the O-ring, developed for something ostensibly completely different, that eventually ends up playing a very vital role in making a well-functioning subsystem for lowering the landing gear, that in turn makes the whole of the retractable landing gear system function better, and thus contributes to the overall design of the system of the aircraft, right? And it happens because it's going to shift the trade-off between the two alternative designs that are competing for how the aircraft should be put together, right? So the rapid improvement of the performance of the landing wheels is contrary to how Foster would understand it, not the result of more investment in that subsystem, but it's dependent on technological developments in the larger system of the airplane, and even developments in systems that are ostensibly not related to the airplane at all, right? The design of the lowering mechanism subsystem is going to be of crucial importance to the reliability of retractable landing gear and to the overall safety of airplanes, right? What's important to understand is that both parts are extremely uncertain at this particular point in time where the designer Northrop is making his decisions, right? It's unclear whether there is a way to make retractable gear more reliable, right? The O-ring has not been invented yet. So it's uncertain how far into the future we have to go to find a working solution for this problem. It's also uncertain whether it's possible to land safely with a set of retractable wheels that can't be unfolded, that can't be lowered, right? Now, there's often going to be this kind of uncertainty about new technology. We know that a big concern about moving from sailboats to steamships wasn't so much whether steam was going to be faster or not, or it's going to be more reliable or not. It was that fire, that having steam required you to have lots of fire on board the ship, right? And today we're uncertain about whether self-propelled cars are going to kill all of us on the roads, even though they're probably much safer than human drivers, right? But the question of whether they become convincingly more safe is going to depend on all of these subsystem developments and innovations in those individual subsystems at the very granular level are going to be very hard to predict and able to, in very dramatic ways, change the performance of the total system, right? When we look back, when we look with the benefit of hindsight, it's quite clear that things were obvious, right? It was obvious that landing gear was going to be more important. But the thing is that when we look at this particular set of choices that Northrop, our story's hero, is making, it's simply not obvious, right? What today seems like an obvious choice was, in the particular situation, totally explorative, right? And highly uncertain. One could simply not know the way that this was going to develop and when the component technologies that would make a particular development happen, when they would be invented, right? The other explanation that the story makes clear, without that being precisely what Vincenzi describes, is that there's going to be this huge degree of complexity in the design of an advanced system like an airplane and like many innovations that we surround ourselves with. When that's the case, there's going to be a very extensive reliance, a very extensive dependency between the systems and the subsystems and the components, which requires really very much architectural knowledge to mediate. If you just want to think about that, I've already mentioned Tim O'Reilly's description of Uber's components previously. And if you want to see another example, I kind of recommend Marin Mazzucato's book on the description of all the technologies that make your iPhones technologically possible, right? She has a book called The Entrepreneurial State where she makes precisely the argument that your iPhone is actually dependent on all of these technologies to work as a collective whole, right? One way to hear what I'm saying here is that the complexity is infinite and that it's completely impossible to control or predict technological development, right? That there's simply too much complexity for us to deal with. Now, that's not really the way I would understand it. I don't think it's infinitely complex, but I do think that it's very complex in a way that doesn't always get brought out when we look at the competition between companies, between technologies, and between dominant designs, right? Often when you kind of scratch the surface, it's going to be a tremendous amount of interactions and complex moving parts in the innovative process, and you often overlook those when you observe at a distance. When you do that, you draw these really pretty theoretical conclusions about what it is that makes innovation work, whether that's a mismatch between supplied and demanded performance, between product architectures and organizational architectures. And really, you end up having this somewhat too sterile view, which doesn't jive particularly well with what the actors on the ground are experiencing. And you end up being a little susceptible to what Hayek, that Austrian economist, has called the pretense of knowledge. This idea that you can actually explain what's going on in a better way than actors on the ground. It is, I think, very difficult to understand things so well from a distance. And it's extremely important to be both very close to the empirical phenomena that we're looking at and humble about how we generalize without losing these crucial contextual details. We'll come back to all of that. Let it be the end of today's class. We've talked about disruptive innovation, architectural innovation, general purpose technologies, and we've closed with some discussions of technological interdependence. I look forward to seeing you in class and discussing this in person. Have a wonderful day.